You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Is it time we just call one of these things Gerard Butler's career has fallen? Isn't this all he has left now, pretty much? I mean, that and direct-to-Redbox movies with 50 Cent.
I'm offended. This is a pure cinematic gold moment. this is the pinnacle of his career, obviously.
This is the Citizen Kane of Gerard Butler films.
It really is.
Before we get started, I've got one person who's brand new to One of Us and one person who's not new to One of Us but is new to doing Highly Suspect reviews. We'll start with her. This is Jennifer, who you might know from the Gigantic Cast.
That's true. Purely suspect. This is absolutely true. I'm Jen, Mayhem's Muse.
And also joining me is Marcos. Now, that's different from Marco, which is a different person. Marcos Lira. Hello.
I'm guessing I'm going to have to go by a different name at a certain point. Maybe just Mark or something to get...
We don't have a Mark. It's true, but we don't mind. I mean, he's Marco. You're Marcos. People, pay attention.
It's going to become Marcos real quick. That's the thing I try to avoid.
The man with the S. Not to be confused with those other Marcos.
So I know you guys have not seen the previous two films in this series. He said, still wondering how this ever happened. But it started with Olympus Has Fallen in 2013 and continued with London Has Fallen in 2016. Now, our general consensus on those was Olympus Falling was big. It was super stupid, but it was kind of the stupid that you could go, okay, this is entertainingly dumb. London Has Fallen went into like the worst type of Roland Emmerich movie level of stupid, like where you're like, come on, guys, how dumb do you think the audience really is? And this one seems like it's pushing forward into the stupid movies. It's emulating into sort of the latter day Jack Ryan films, where it's like, let's not be quite as dumb as, you know, 2012 or something like that, the way London Has Fallen is. And let's move into, you know, the sum of all fears type territory.
Standards have fallen.
I was actually kind of weirded out by that because I'm used to movies getting more and more ridiculous, like Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. But
only one part of this movie was crazy, really, for the most part.
Right. Well, I mean, other than just the improbability of, like, a lot of this being able to happen at all.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, like, politically. Like, there's a sequence where the president is under fire in a situation where they all know, like he's been in a stable situation for a while and they know people might be coming for him. And there's, what, 30 people guarding him or something, you know? And you're like, shouldn't the army pretty much be there at that point?
Oh, wait, look, a shiny thing in the distance that has nothing to do with anything and isn't quantifiable. Let's all go chase after that instead.
Right.
This is great.
30 also became 5 really fast.
It really did. But this continues following the story of Secret Service agent Mike Banning, who now has saved the President of the United States twice and also, in passing, has saved the life of his friend Morgan Freeman, who started off in the first movie as Secretary of State, and then the second one he was Vice President. Now he's President, as Morgan Freeman should be in every movie ever. President or God, right? And that's just kind of the Morgan Freeman rule now.
The role he was born to play.
Pretty much.
Caddy leader.
And they're friends, obviously. I mean, why wouldn't they be? He saved his life twice. Banning is having some problems. He's had so many injuries and concussions over the space of the last two movies that he's got chronic pain that's just getting worse and damage to his back. And he's getting a little bit worried about where his future lays. And he's also a little worried because he knows that he is about to get asked to move up to be head of the Secret Service, the director of it. And he's not sure he wants to sit behind a desk because, come on, man, he is a man of action. But when a brand new assassination attempt on the president featuring lots of missile-launched drones...
Very likely scenario.
Yeah, basically kills everyone except for Mike Banning and the president, who he manages to save. Of course, the natural conclusion everyone comes to is, oh, well, Mike Banning must have been the one trying to kill him.
I mean, obviously. This can't possibly be a setup.
Well, it's And a lot of this really depends on the fact that the president is in a coma, so he can't be the one to wake up and go, are you people fucking crazy? Of course Mike's not trying to kill me. But it goes into fugitive territory as Mike goes on the run because he's got to prove who the real assassins are, who have gone to enormous and bizarre lengths to try and prove that Mike Banning is the one who is behind this, make him into a patsy. And along the way, we do get the actual, and I mean this unironically, pleasure of finding out that Nick Nolte, who in here is playing an old, crazy, paranoid ex-vet guy in the woods, is his dad, and they get to team up against a bunch of soldiers in a very funny action sequence. So, honest to God, kind of loved that.
Best part of the movie, by far.
But everything comes back around to, like, that moment where you're like, you know, Mike is going to get in everybody's good graces again, and then he's got to, in pretty much the entirety of the third act, save the president from the last-ditch attempt to take his life. And this is Angel Has Fallen. And I think we all agree that the biggest problem here really has to do with central casting, as Jen brought up, and as I've complained about many times with these things. You don't put certain actors in a movie who literally never play anything but bad guys and try and pretend like, oh no, they're not bad, it's fun.
You have no idea what's going to happen in this completely and totally predictable casting choice.
Yeah.
Surprise!
I mean, I even talked about this. I called it when we watched the trailer. And the movie doesn't, and this isn't even really a spoiler, because you're 15 minutes into the movie before they reveal that, like, the guy's like his best friend who he was a veteran with, played by Danny Houston, who runs a giant military contractor company, is the guy behind the whole thing, but he's got a secret boss with a disguised voice. And I won't say who that is, but literally, if you can't put it together, you've probably never seen one of these type of movies before. But, yeah, lots of gunfire, lots of, Mike grabbing his neck and saying, ow.
Yep.
That's what we look for in a Gerard Butler film.
Looking vaguely pained.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. The opening for the first probably 30 minutes, I thought was really good at painting a picture for, like, so I'm a veteran. I don't know if anybody else knows that, but the whole not knowing where you fit in, painkillers, like, I actually thought that part was really inspired by the kind of, like, where you go after the military kind of thing. So I thought that was actually kind of, like, oh, wow, like, whoever went through this kind of, I mean, whoever wrote this kind of went through it a little bit, but it's weird how all that disappears when he starts running and gunning towards the second half of the movie.
Well, there is definitely a real effort to try and underlay this with a sort of, like, which is a very common thing for action movies, in a lot of action movies, that the guy is a veteran and dealing with, like, hey, we didn't completely take care of our veterans, and they're kind of, like, confused about where do they stand, as you said yourself, yeah. Is definitely an underlying thing here. The movie is definitely making more pokes towards actual serious drama at points and real world stuff than the previous two films are.
Well, that's also what's really weird is that they didn't make a VA joke, but they made a Russia joke, and then there was a mountain militia joke at a certain part of the movie.
I kind of appreciated that much. It's like the fact these mountain militia guys would have a chance against, like, a hardened vet, like, black ops guy. You're like, yeah, no, sorry.
I really thought the part that was really hilarious about that part was Mountain Militia was really quick to be like, oh, we're going to defend the black president real quick.
Yeah, seems like they would probably hail him as a hero, right? They thought he was the guy who was trying to kill him. But there's an interesting cast throughout this thing. Like I mentioned, Danny Houston, Tim Blake Nelson, Nick Nolte, Piper Perabo returns, actually doesn't return as his wife. She's replacing Radha Mitchell, who played the role in the previous films. Jada Pinkett Smith plays an FBI agent who is completely set on the fact that Mike, she's the one to be, you know, the Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive, basically. Lance Reddick returns as a Secret Service director, although unfortunately they give him very little to do, and I love me some Lance Reddick ever since Fringe.
Wow.
Yeah. You ever watch Fringe?
Yep.
Yeah, I love him on that. But, you know, I want to hear more from you guys. Jennifer?
I mean, I feel like I could go on for days about the layers of disappointment in this film. But let's start with the female characters of this movie, because why not? That's why I'm here, right?
Which one?
Yep, that's it. That's all I have. No, Jada Pinkett Smith, like, why? Why would you waste such a great actor with such diverse characters as she's capable of playing and put her in a role with absolutely one note, like the bulldog on the chase that leads up to absolutely nothing. And then we're moving on to the next chapter of the movie. Like, what a waste. There could have at least been some sort of epic duel between her and him. That would have been great. Her wig was great. I will say that. Because I noticed these things. Because I'm me. And then, you know, you get Coyote Ugly coming out of retirement, out of nowhere.
I did not pass the Bechdel test. There was never two women talking about someone that was not a man. I don't think there was ever two women talking.
There were never two women in the same scene together.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because there were two women in the whole movie.
I was about to say, maybe three. There was only two.
There was the lady curled up in the corner in the very last act that he told to shush.
We got one frame. Yeah.
No, but at that rate, you got to count like the random Hispanic nurses that were in the scenes for seconds.
a lot of extras, but that's about it.
There were a lot of characters that got a lot of screenplay time and absolutely zero lines.
Yeah.
Like second in charge of the whole counter organization who never says a single word until the very last moment. Okay. Right. Why not? Sure.
I mean, even the wife is just there for there to be someone else for Mike to be worried about. And Jada Pinkett Smith is just there because somebody that the audience, who's a recognizable actor, had to be a new character who has never met Mike Banning before to be trying to chase him down ineffectually.
Wearing heeled combat boots, because that's what you do.
Heeled combat boots.
It's great. It's
good. Wear flats. You got to be stylish. I mean,
well, she has to fit into the frame with all of the actors that are taller.
True.
It's the real scenario there. I tend to gravitate more towards looking at the way the movie was filmed when I watch projects like this. Like when I look at horror films or really over the top action films, I look at the cinematography. And I gotta tell you, ever since the whole drunken cameraman shtick became a shtick, I've been exhausted watching movies. It's impossible to watch a movie like this and not get a headache. The whole jerky camera, can't focus on anything, super tight frames moving around a lot. I'm over it. Well, I'm really over it.
Because you don't want to point out the fact that Butler, who I'm sure in his prime was much more capable, is now in his 50s, is getting very paunchy. And
he's
looks,
a little chunk in this film, isn't he?
Young Russell Crowe, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed.
And, you know, I mean, he's supposed to look like the ultimate badass.
He is a lion. Sir.
He's a lion.
He is a lion.
You can't do that without some editing tricks, I suppose. But I don't think it's as bad as, say, the way Paul Greengrass did in the Bourne movies, where he just takes the camera and shakes it like a baby he's trying to kill. He's
true.
Just like, this is like, it's just too very fast cut editing. But I kind of didn't expect it not to be with a movie like this.
Fair.
I mean, if it had been like Iko Uwe or Tony John, and I would be like, what are you doing? Keep the camera still. With this, you're like, okay, it's to be expected. I did think there were some interesting shots in here, though.
There were some.
Where I was like, this is actually better cinematography outside of the action than I would expect. And I thought that on the whole, when they were in the firefight stuff, I was like, this is actually pretty cool. Like, there's a whole last act is a lot of just dudes with huge guns shooting at each other in a hospital. And I was like, oh, this is, I mean, it's not hard boiled, but it's not bad.
Yeah. The lighting direction in particular was really good in this.
It's actually really funny on that note. So I usually have only two ways of seeing most movies. Like, is this fun? And does this make sense? Like, from a story beat perspective. But this military and action movies just kind of activate that part of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this tactically made a lot of sense if the other side was idiots.
Right.
Because there's little things that I don't know if you guys picked up on them as civilians or anything, but like they're terrible. Like they're really, the opposition is terrible. They flag the doorway. So Gerald Butler always has an opening. They don't cover their evacuation at any point. Like,
see, these are the type of things I don't know. And I'm like, I totally believe you. I bet you nobody even, they're like, you know what? No one's going to notice. Well,
but they called it out at the beginning, though, right? Yeah. Because Gerard Butler got the guy and kicked him down the staircase. And he was like, well, if you weren't in the middle of the frickin' staircase, it wouldn't be a problem. Yeah, obviously, there's some lack of training happening here. Pointed out in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
A valid point. But, you know, I mean, the guy running him, Danny Houston, he's supposed to be as much of a badass as Banning is, and you're like, come on, guy, you don't train your people better than that. And they're all
go back
carrying,
to catching Wolverine.
They're all right. They're all carrying like, you know, like the guns from that look like they look. They're so big, they look like the guns from that movie Eraser. You know,
wow.
I'm bringing you way back, just huge fire through like cinder block guns.
And with grenade launchers.
With grenade launchers, of course. And our hero is just John McClaning it all the way through this thing. I mean, there's a point I'm like, I know this isn't realistic, but it's a, quote, blank has fallen movie. And believe me, this makes the previous two films, I mean, by comparison, this is super realistic.
I'm a little afraid.
Yeah.
I'm a little afraid.
And you should be. I like that instead of going the, like, Roland Emmerich-y route, it's more going the Jack Ryan-y route, because it's like, yeah, we still think our audience is stupid, but we don't think that they're actually, like, have actual brain damage like they do in the first two. They're like, this one, they're like, oh, these may be stupid, but you know, the only series that's ever successfully managed to be consistently more and more stupid and it's good is the Fast and the Furious films, in my opinion.
That's
and I still don't know how they pull it off, but they do.
The Rock.
Huh?
The Rock.
The yeah. Rock, Vin Diesel, I don't know. Family. Mm-hmm.
There's not a family.
Maybe that's it. There needs to be more of a family in these movies.
What are you talking about? We have so many father-son moments in this movie.
There are a few, but he needs a team of badasses that he brings in, like reluctant badasses. I don't know. No, he doesn't. We don't need any more of these. Is what
I
want to
see the buddy cop movie that comes after this.
What, with who?
The movie between Homeboy and his dad going to, like, conquer the world of mental health in their, what is it, the zero gravity chambers. And that's the movie I want to see out of this. That is the only redeemable factor of this for me.
That was the best part of the film, for sure, with the Nick Nolte aspect of it. And this movie desperately needed more Nick Nolte. And weirdly, I was thinking early in the film, Gerard Butler's starting to turn into Nick Nolte. He's like, you know, like at that
point when we
first started to get to know him in 48 Hours, where he's just he's like, oh, jeez, I'm back. Oh, I hate this. Like, oh my God, he is turning into Nick Nolte, who turns out to be his dad.
Exactly.
So
blowing shit up in the forest, as you do.
It all makes sense now. But yeah, I mean, there were so many places where right out of 80s action movies, you could say what the next line is characters were going to say word for word because it was such an utter cliche. I mean, literally like 10, 15 points where I was like saying to myself, this is what they're going to say next. And they said that exact line. You're like, oh my God. Like, I mean, the most egregious was, I'm glad it was you. I was like, oh, okay,
now
no,
make out. Just kiss. Kiss. Yeah, now the kiss. Whole
time, she's like, you know, these two want to kiss. There's a point where the hero and the villain pull out knives on each other, and I look at her, and she's just nodding at me. Like, mm-hmm. We know what that really
means. This is obviously where this was going to go.
That was honestly another point of, like, I know this was veteran glorification, because the only thing you use knives for over deployment is cutting open your MREs. And you always wish, like, you got some sort of actual combat out of it, but it'll never happen. So that's why I thought that last scene was very much like, this is somebody...
Wish,
like,
fulfillment.
This is your nod. Wish,
yeah.
The guys who, like, guns run out at the same time. I was like, I mean, he was trying to get all western-y in that whole final sequence. You're just like, and we also knew that was going to happen. There had to be a one-on-one mano-e-mano fisticuffs.
I thought it was going to be handgun versus handgun, because he, like, prizes that 9mm throughout the entire movie.
Right.
And then it ended up, I mean, I didn't know, does he knife fight in the other movies?
I don't remember. I mean,
no,
I
he just throws his gun at the face of his enemy, like,
take that, girl.
And then they make out.
That's
the best rom-com of the year, really.
Jen was just going through her own version of this film in her head the whole time. You know what would be better here is if they totally made out. Right.
Look,
here.
I like my fanfic, okay? My ending would be way better than theirs.
Probably would. And I would like to hear it. Let's go into final thoughts. Get us started.
Final thoughts. Okay. I didn't fall asleep.
That's a plus.
There were moments that everybody in the audience laughed because it was very ironic that we all knew where the plot was going before it went there. Casting, we would like for you to show up at some point, please, in a movie. Please, actually cast a movie. Thank you.
Cast people who aren't, by their casting, going to be playing exactly who we know what they're going to do as characters.
Unless you're doing it ironically. I mean, if you want everybody to know where your movie's going before they've watched it, great. Maybe waste less money on a movie. That's fine. Morgan Freeman was the best part of that movie. Nick Nolte, also best part.
All the old people.
Love the sassy, crotchety old lines. Those really hold it together. I wish they'd made out at the end. Overall, I would say I give this... Are we doing out of 5 or out of 10?
You can do it whatever way you want to.
All right, I'm going out of 5 because it's not worth a 10, let's be honest. I'm going with a 2.25 neutered zoo lions out of 5.
What about you, Marcos?
So I definitely enjoyed it a little bit more, but I also saw it through the lens of this is fun once. I would not I wouldn't see it a second time. Wouldn't recommend anybody sees it a second time.
Right.
Nick Nolte is the best part. I don't agree that Morgan Freeman was the best part because he actually looks bored. A lot of the scenes that he's in there when they're moving him and stuff.
And he's a coma through 90% of the films.
Isn't it sad that that's the best part of the movie?
So I'm the just Oscar saying. For best I'm coma performance goes to Morgan Freeman. He's just so compelling the way he lies there.
It was the sass on the boat in the beginning that did it for me, really.
Fair, fair.
Smart ass.
One little nitpick that I wish I would have seen, because when I learned the movie was rated R at the beginning of the watching the poster or whatever, it was like, all the explosions, everybody's still whole. They're neatly piled after every like big explosion. That said, I don't know, 3 out of 5, like it's okay, not bad, not great.
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
3 out of 5 what?
Oh, yeah. That's
you gotta put,
a
thing on it.
Hovering
yeah.
bat drones.
There you
Ooh.
Go. Nice. Yeah, I mean, I genuinely enjoyed this more than the first two. I will say that. I think it's by far the best of the three. That being said, you're like, you guys are on the right path, but you still need to get somebody in there to write dialogue that's not embarrassing. I mean, the dialogue is just embarrassing. And Butler, God help him, he knows this is all he's got, so he really does try super hard. He's never been the greatest actor. But, you know, I mean, he's like, this is what I'm going out on. This is going to be my legacy, you know. He's like, damn it, why didn't I come back for the 300 sequel when they offered me to? Because you were dead. Sorry, that wouldn't have worked.
I was about to say, he did come back. He's a corpse in the first 5 minutes.
Right, well, fair.
Phantom of the Opera 2? I would watch it.
I would not. I wouldn't rewatch Phantom of the Opera. So.
Oh,
I'm not a Weber fan, so... Sorry. I like almost every other musical, but I don't like Weber.
Cover your ears, cats.
Except for Jesus
Cover
Christ
them.
Superstar.
Still has the Bounty Hunter.
It still has the Bounty Hunter?
Wow. I like you. You're sassy. Come back, please.
This is passable. It's parts of it are actually very entertaining, but it's longer than it needs to be. 121 minutes. Jesus Christ. And there's nothing in here you're not going to see coming ahead of time. Like, nothing. With the possible exception of some of the cool shit with Nick Nolte in the woods. Even that's like, okay, I have a feeling this is going to happen, but I really want to see it happen. And then it does, and you're like, okay, that was worth it. That paid off.
I thought he was going to go Deer Hunter. Instead, he just went Claymore on everybody. Yeah.
And he has a kind of a ridiculously triacly arc towards the end where you're like, come on, guys, really? All right. Everything's great now.
But what happened to the typewriter?
Yeah, the typewriter. We never find out the fate of the typewriter.
It's the true hero.
In the next you don't find out the fate of the truck.
Or the truck! Or the truck!
I want to see Typewriter Has Fallen.
Ooh.
Or Truck Has Fallen.
It's like John Wick, but Olympus Has Fallen. You know, they come for the typewriter, and then he goes off on it because that was the one thing he had.
Yeah, I think that if you like these movies, you'll probably, I don't know, you might like this utter stupidity of the first two more. I thought this was much more tolerable than those were. The action was better, but it's certainly nothing to write home about. I'm going to give it 5 out of 10. Little black spots on Morgan Freeman's face. They're okay. Growing. They're growing. It's worrying me. I'm like, you've got a lot. Have you seen a dermatologist, sir? I know there were freckles once. What? They've grown. Alien invasion on Morgan Freeman's face.
Oh, my goodness.